It is Sunday, the 10th of May, Mother's Day. I'm Anthony, VK6AXB, and welcome to News West. Building on a history of amateur radio news in VK6 going back to 1931.
This is VK6ARN.
Today, especially, we all remember and celebrate our mothers, and greetings to any mums out there listening. We hope you have a great day. Many families might be out and about today, enjoying the sunny weather. One person who's been out and about is John, VK6ASK. Here he is to tell us all about it.
Hi, I'm John, VK6ASK, and I thought I'd just do a little talk on Silos on the Air. It's a great little program, a bit like Parks on the Air or POTA, except it's all about the silos around the wheat belt of Western Australia. So we'd like to think we might get a few more people interested in doing silos. Great little activity, and the main difference between silos and POTA, well, obviously is the silos, but with silos you only need three contacts. One of them has to be single sideband, but once you've got those contacts in your bag, that's all you need. So if you're just passing by a silo somewhere, easy to do an activation, no doubt about it. There are silos all across Western Australia, and if you can see a silo that's not on the map, you might just want to contact the owners of the site and get that one allocated. And anything you might want or need to understand a little bit better, there are rules and regs, etc. But however, it runs on activators and hunters, and activators, just like Parks on the Air, require you to be registered with Silos on the Air and have your call sign in there. And then basically it works exactly the same way as Parks on the Air does. Hunters do not need to be registered at all. It's up to the activator to upload their logs. Logs are very, very easy to upload, and if you do make the odd mistake, like I have done in the past, you can easily pull down your logs and upload the rectified ones for that. So, yeah, it's a great little program. We're trying our hardest to get a few more people interested, so please have a look at it, silosontheair.com, and please do not hesitate to contact people like myself, John VK6ASK, or David VK6 Delta Sierra, if you would like some more information. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to hearing you silo to silo. Thank you.
Good morning, campers. The Southern Electronics Group would like to invite you to the Mike Beale Mayanup Hamcampion that is on next week at Mayanup Sports Ground. This is a casual camping event where you can set up your radio and any number of antennas on a large site with plenty of tall trees. The facilities are very good, with hot showers, a powered camp kitchen, and a fire pit, providing a great place to sit around and gas bag well into the evening. For those that have not been before, Mayanup is south of Boyup Brook. The easiest way from Perth is down the Albany Highway to Kojanup. Turn right at the big wool cart, and then left once you reach Mayanup locality. Camping is BYO everything, including drinking water. The rainwater on site is not ideal for people used to drinking treated water. The nearest shop to Mayanup is Boyup Brook, 15 minutes away, where there are some interesting things like Burt's Car Museum, the Carnaby Beetle Collection, and some very good cafes. Camping fees are $10 per person per night, which all goes to the Mayanup Progress Association for ground hire. Gates open Friday, 15th of May at lunchtime. If you are intending to come or just want some more information, please drop me an email at vk6ek@katt.au. That's vk6ek@kat.au. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
G'day from WARG. This is WARG News for Sunday, the 10th of May, 2026. On the 4th, WARG had its AGM. The more things change, the more things stay the same. There's 11 on committee, and many of the faces are the same, doing different jobs. We'd like to thank Colin VK6ACT for his mandated 3-year retirement from the task of being our technical officer. Of course, he's not going anywhere and he'll still help out, but we'd like to welcome Ray VK6ZRW back as returning tech officer. Carsten VK6PCB retired from the tasks of membership secretary and treasurer, tasks which have been now picked up by Mitch, VK6XB. Well, these are my dulcet tones, so I guess I'm still publicity officer, and Anthony, VK6AXB, remains as honourable secretary. My sins I did pick up from Ray, the chairmanship of Vice. So, let's get on with some Vice announcements. Coming up in June, you know, it's the WAG 2026 Ham Radio Junk Sale. Set your date for 10 a.m. on Saturday, the 13th of June. And come down to the First Midland Scout Hall, number 10 Helen Street in Bellevue. If you're hoping to be a seller, please let Anthony know on secretary@warg.org.au and book your tables now. You can set up an hour earlier from 9 a.m. on the day. Just a reminder, the WAG 2026 Ham Radio Junk Sale, general admission, 10 a.m. on Saturday, the 13th of June. It's a date. Just a very quick reminder that the WAG Technical and General Net will be on VK6RLM and linked repeaters through the All-Star Hubs from 10:30 a.m. this morning, unless of course you're listening to it in the evening, then it's next week. 7.3s from VK6RRG.
The May edition of RASA's QTC magazine will be published this weekend, Sunday evening to be exact. QTC is published monthly by RASA, the Radio Amateur Society of Australia. In this edition is a report of the Antennapalooza event in Victoria, an event that I was fortunate enough to be able to attend, and a summary of the RASA team meeting in the days following Antennapalooza. Another visitor to Antennapalooza was Gus, a cute little piece of mechanical, electronic and communications technology. Gus stands for Ground Uncrewed System. Gus is very useful for forward observation posts. Unlike humans, Gus doesn't get bored. It's a good story, complete with photos. In the Dits and Dars pages, there's information of great interest to both new and seasoned CW operators. Philip ZS1PSH is now our New Zealand correspondent, and this month he writes about the NZART Centennial Conference and the Sangster Shield Contest. So if you fancy a trip to New Zealand, it's not too late to book in for these things. For those who like to chase D expeditions, there's a new one announced for Lord Howe Island. Keep an ear out for that one. More mundanely, but at the same time importantly, are promotions for the resources provided by RASA for amateurs. The Foundation Level Study Guide, the Introduction to Amateur Radio Handbook, the VK Regulations Handbook, QRM Guru, and the This Is Amateur Radio brochure. All of these resources are free and are available to everyone. There's no requirement for membership. Lastly, but not least important, is the support we provide to clubs. These are in the form of the This Is Amateur Radio brochure, free club event advertising, free advertising of study courses and exam dates. Advertising club events in QTC is drama-free with short lead-up times. Get your stuff to us early in the first week of the month and you're in. If you're not sure how to go about it, send an email to the team. The email address is info@vkradioamateurs.org. I'll say that one again, info@vkradioamateurs.org. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
A bit of de-expedition news. Chris, VK3 Quebec Bravo, advises that a team of 7 operators will be on Lord Howe Island in the first 2 weeks of June, operating under the call sign Victor Juliet 2 Lima and focusing on 40 metres to 10 metres, CW, FT8 and SSB. They'll also be joining in the 2026 DX Marathon contest. Lord Howe Island is a separate DX entity, so if you need this one for the log, start planning now. We'll aim to bring you more information on this in the coming weeks, assuming it's not already covered elsewhere. So, that's Victor Juliet 2 Lima, Lord Howe Island, first 2 weeks of June.
News West, VK6ARN, across Western Australia.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day, fellow amateur Randall, Victor Kilo 6 Whiskey Romeo, raised an interesting question. Using his HP 8920A RF communications test set, which you might recall from our adventures in measuring radio harmonic power in 2023, that report is on my GitHub repository, but I digress, Randall wondered if the signal strength he was seeing on several radios were the same, and discovered that, in fact, they were not. It made Randall ask who set the standard, and, following on from that, what does this look like in the real world? In 2014, episode 149 of the series What Use Is an F-Call, I published an article titled The Simple S-Unit. In it, I referred to a standard for S-units defined in 1981. Unfortunately, I didn't provide any references, so, armed with more than a decade extra experience, Randall encouraged me to investigate. 20 seconds into my search, I discovered IAIU Region 1 Technical Recommendation R1, which is four statements related to the topic at hand. Under the title Standardization of S-meter Readings, it states that 1. One S-unit corresponds to a signal level difference of 6 dB. 2. On the bands below 30 MHz, a meter deviation of S9 corresponds to an available power of minus 73 dBm from a continuous wave signal generator connected to the receiver input terminals. 3. On the bands above 144 MHz, this available power shall be minus 93 dBm. 4. The metering system shall be based on quasi-peak detection with an attack time of 10 milliseconds plus or minus 2 milliseconds and a decay time constant of at least 500 milliseconds. So, job done, right? Yeah, no, not so much. The web page I quoted from is linked from the Wikipedia S-meter entry and was archived in 2005. And at the time existed on a Swedish domain in the home directory of Kjell, Sierra Mike 7 Golf Victor Foxtrot. The page has two additional interesting things. The words Brighton 1981 and Torremolinos 1990, both of which refer to IAIU conferences. The reports for these meetings are online. In searching for any reference to the definition of the S-unit, the 1990 report shows that resolution 83-1 had the status of action completed, whatever that means. The 1981 conference document has all manner of interesting references, including log forms and summaries for international contest use, meteor scatter QSO procedure, and the definition of the standard way to determine Morse code speeds using the word Paris, followed by a 7-bit word space, to name three. The one we're interested in is called Bravo Mike Stroke 134, S-meter standards, appearing on page 33 and 34 of the 1981 report. It's a photocopy, so you can see the text from other pages superimposed. I'm making this observation because this is essentially a standards document, intended to be adhered to by industry and the amateur community. It gets better, or rather, worse. The text that is referenced by Wikipedia uses numbers for the four elements, where BM134 uses letters. The third item in BM134 says that it applies for bands above 30 MHz, but the document I just quoted appears to be unique in saying that it applies to bands above 144 MHz. The fourth item, dealing with the way that the meter responds, has been altered on BM134. The text, plus or minus 2 milliseconds and a decay time, are in a different font and at an angle, worth noting that the change includes MS twice rather than MSEC as the unit for milliseconds used elsewhere. Searching for a phrase within the standard, I discovered the Region 1 HF Manager's Handbook, version 7.01, which appears to include the S-meter standard in Chapter 11.1.2, but closer inspection reveals that the fourth item is missing, the one about quasi-peak detection. This is significant because the S-meter standard is based on a CW signal, not an SSB signal, which fluctuates. There's no reference as to where or when this was removed, or by whom. These changes are repeated in subsequent versions of the HF Manager's Handbook. There's other differences too. Instead of using millivolt and microvolt as shown in the original BM134 standard table, all units have been converted to millivolt for no discernible reason. The new table, including typo, is also copied everywhere. While we're at it, the original standard contains the letters Victor, Echo, Romeo, Oscar, November at the top. They don't show in the HF Manager's Handbook either. This is curious since, last time I checked, those letters signify an organisation that at least some here will recognise, the Vereniging voor Experimenteel Radioonderzoek in Nederland, known to the people who don't speak fluent Dutch as the Peak Body for Amateur Radio in the Netherlands, VERON. Searching its website does not reveal their contribution to this standards document, which, I have to say, is par for the course. Much of our amateur radio history is poorly documented or archived, if at all, something which I've spent plenty of my time attempting to remedy over more than a decade, one article at a time. Moving on. The phrase I mentioned earlier bears reading out in its entirety. From BM134, quote, "We hope that the current recommendation will be followed by all equipment manufacturers, so that in a not-too-distant future, one will know how to interpret the strength report of the other station," end quote. It goes on to say, quote, "Societies should advise as much as possible their members about equipment manufacturers adhering to this recommendation and shall try to avoid publication of receiver designs which do not in principle use the recommended standards," end quote. Which brings me to you. What have you done lately about this? It's only been 45 years. Perhaps it's time to implement this? I can tell you that preliminary results show that the S1 level sensitivity associated with the radios that Randall showed me are reporting S1 when really they should be reporting about S4. You might wonder why this is the case. Calibration appears to be the underlying cause. While S9 itself is variable in accuracy, as in some radios are more accurately close to -73 dBm, others are consistently 5 dB shy of that. When an S4 signal is reported as S1, then the 6 dB step size is not correctly implemented. Similarly, when an S9 plus 20 is reported by a signal that's only 16 dB stronger than S9, there's more fudging going on. The differences between a signal with and without preamp are also worth noting as being inconsistent. In other words, the level and steps associated with S-meter units are all over the place, which is interesting since the authors of the standard already alluded to this when 45 years ago they wrote, quote, "Simple means for calibration of at least the 6 dB level ratio should be published," end quote. While we're digging for causes, why is there not a standards library associated with the IAIU, where documents like BM134 exist, and with it their current level of application? Before you tell me money, I'd point out that in 1981, IAIU Region 1 had 263,945.88 dollars or francs, guilders, pounds or glass beads in the bank. It's unclear which, since there's no units stated. At the 1990 conference, IAIU Region 2 had a reported net worth of $150,000, with $40,000 annual income, and Region 3 reported that its finances are also sound. How do I know? That's in those conference documents too. Curiously, the 1981 report states that, quote, "When presenting the 1981 and subsequent accounts, the Treasurer would also prepare a brief report which would explain the reasons for items of such expenditure for which the purpose was not obvious," end quote. I wonder what happened to those explanations. So, what is the current status of BM134 and what are the legal implications of me publishing it on my GitHub page? While we're at it, I realize that I can fix the Wikipedia page, but where do I point it at? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
Hi, I'm Steve Kennedy, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Did you know that on top of chasing DXCC awards, there are a number of other large global organisations with similar schemes, but using islands, parks, lighthouses, CQ and ITU zones, etc. as the defining entity? Today I'm going to focus on the Islands of the Air program and some of my interaction with it. This is a brief description of IOTA taken directly from the IOTA website, word for word. IOTA, or Islands on the Air, is an exciting and innovative activity program that has caught the interest of thousands of radio amateurs worldwide. Established in 1964, it promotes radio contacts with stations located on islands around the world to enrich the experience of all active on the amateur bands, and to do this it draws on the widespread mystique surrounding islands. It's administered by Islands on the Air, IOTA Limited, called here IOTA Management, in partnership with the Radio Society of Great Britain, or RSGB. IOTA Management has grouped the islands, Oceans Islands, into some 1,200 IOTA groups, with, for reasons of geography, varying numbers of counters, i.e. qualifying islands, in each group, and has published the listings in the IOTA directory and on the IOTA website. The objective for the IOTA Island Chaser is to make radio contact with at least one counter in as many of these groups as possible, and for the IOTA Island Activator to provide such island contacts. The program has a strong rule structure. IOTA Management encourages friendly competition among chasers by publishing details of participants' performance in an honour roll and annual listings, as well as by recognising it with certificates and prestige awards. So, many of you will know that our region, called Oceania, basically the Pacific Ocean Islands, of which Australia is the largest and is designated by IOTA as OC-001. Christmas Island is OC-002, Cocos Keeling Islands are OC-003, Lord Howe Island is OC-004, and Norfolk Island is OC-005, and so on. WA has 13 island groups, not including the mainland. Many of our island groups have been activated over the years by groups such as NCRG, West Oz DX Group, MEL, VK6LC, Silent Key, and I'm sure many others. A few notable operations have included Rowley Shoals and Browse Island, both of which had international operators involved and significant logistics efforts required. Well, some of our islands need Clipperton-like organisations to activate. Many are simply a matter of zipping over to Rottnest Garden or Wedge Island and everything in between. Fun medium intensity activation is Christmas and Cocos Keeling Islands, both VK9 locations, so you get IOTA and DXCC chasers looking for you. Both lovely places to visit. Regular reasonably priced flights to get there, and both have good options for accommodation. Cool thing about these activations are that there is a worldwide following of IOTA chasers. So if you do a bit of marketing before heading to one of these islands, you can experience what it's like to be the DX. This can be lots of fun and really does hone your operating skills, not to mention that a modest setup on an island 10 feet from the ocean is like having a kilowatt and a Yagi at 30 metres off the ground at home. For anyone who hasn't experienced this, picture walking into a pub with 200 people waiting for you, and each of them only wants to shake your hand, give you their name to write down, and get the hell out of the pub in the shortest time possible, and none of them want to wait any longer than humanly possible, so they all yell at you like you're on a stock exchange in the 1970s. It's the most fun you can have with your clothes still on. My first conscious IOTA activation was in the Torres Strait in 2019. I've been working in the Torres Strait off and on for a couple of years on a public safety comms project, and always meant to take some radio gear across, but only got around to it towards the end of my time there. I had two nights on Porama, which is an island in the central Torres Strait island group, around 130 kilometres northeast of Thursday Island off the tip of Cape York. The island has a population of 167 according to the 2016 census, and about a third of the island is occupied by the light aircraft strip. I hope a trusty old FT-857D, a borrowed soda beams dipole, thanks to Glyn, VK6PAW, and a squid pole. I threw the ends of the dipole over some trees close to the hut I was in, but only about 20 feet from the ocean on one side and a couple of 100 metres on the other side. It shouldn't have worked, and it didn't on SSB, but I made about 150 contacts on FT-8 in the 2 nights I was there. I think one of my first contacts was to South America, which was a real treat being a VK6. I did the same for the next 3 or 4 nights on Thursday Island after the trip to Parama, before returning to Perth. My biggest regret was not having taken it all over on earlier trips. I worked on 5 other islands over the course of that project, and the effort I needed to go to for the activation was quite minimal. As far as I can tell, my activation of Parama was the first known activation on a Torres Strait island outside of the main 2 islands, Thursday and Horn Islands. The same year ended up being pretty busy, with a 2-week trip to Christmas Island on the same project, using the same gear, and then a week on Cocos with a bunch of mates purely centred on ham radio and beer and fishing. And we have more gear on that one. So, looking for a new challenge for your ham radio habit? Get some friends together or organise on your own to visit an island. Advertise it on IOTA and DX news sites. Look for a good QSL manager. I've used David EB7DX quite a few times and he's great. And have a shot. Thanks for listening. This has been Steve Kennedy, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
Good morning, it's Roy, VK6X-Ray Victor. I think you probably know my voice by now. That's me again, helpline this week. Same as with last week, not much to report, unfortunately. Did ring Graham to see if he had any manuals left. He may still have some. He's got ICOM service manuals. If you're looking for an ICOM service manual, give Graham a ring. Well, give him an email. In fact, that would be better. VK6RO, that's Rotten Oranges, or Romeo Oscar, at hotmail.com. I'll say again, VK6 Romeo Oscar at hotmail.com. Sir, Mother's Day 2026. 2026 now. Wake up, Roy. Yeah, okay. And during my research this week, I realised that I've been doing this for 51 years now. I thought it was only 40. I've been telling people I've been doing it for 40 years, those who want to listen, of course. But I'm actually 50 because I started Father's Day in 1975, which was July the 7th. I mean, it was July the 7th, Father's Day, and that equates to 51 years ago. My goodness, doesn't time fly when you're having fun? Thank you once again for listening. It's Roy, VK6, X-Ray Victor, 73s for now. Cheers now.
Thanks, Roy. We certainly appreciate you being here with Helpline. And that brings us to the end of the broadcast for another week. I'd like to thank all of you for listening, and especially thank the broadcasters, relay stations, and all who submitted items for the news. We're always looking for more, so if you've got something newsworthy, why not record it in MP3, preferably 256k bit mono, or whatever you can manage, and email it to newswest@vk6.net. along with your contact details, in case we need to follow anything up. Send it to us as soon as you can. If it arrives by noon on Friday, it should make that Sunday's broadcast, but the earlier the better. Callbacks will follow now on most frequencies. We're grateful for our dedicated callback operators, like Mark, VK6USB, who does the broadcast and takes the 2-metre callbacks on VK6RAP in Perth. Thanks, Mark. So, you've either been listening to, or you have just missed, News West. All being well, we'll do this again next week. Until then, 7-3 from VK6ARN.